Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I'll take the train in broad daylight, then walk to his house from the station. This way his neighbors and bodyguards can see that I'm up to no evil purpose. I'll walk slowly, even stop now and then and gaze up at the rooftops for pigeons, making an easy target of myself. I'll don a smile, indicating that I'm unafraid and have come on pleasant matters, family matters. I'll go bearing gifts. In one hand, I'll hold a panettone, that fancy Italian bread filled with tiny fruits and raisins. And already I can see Johnny and his lady huddled in their kitchen, flooded by the early sunshine, anxiously slicing off a few pieces, then toasting them lightly and buttering them. In my other hand, I hold a naked mozzarella, pure white, still juicy and swollen from its recent baptism in water. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Anthony Valerio. His 1997 novel, Conversation with Johnny, has just come out in an audible version and portrays a New York City where the Twin Towers still stand and the Italian mafia still reigns supreme. In stories, he tells Johnny, Nicholas expresses his longing for love, bemoans the affairs that never led to lasting love, and tries to get Johnny to set straight a young professor who's focusing too much on Italian crime and not enough on Italian culture. Hi, Anthony. Thanks for joining me today.
It's a real pleasure to be with you today, Galit.
So how did you come to write Conversation with Johnny back in the 90s?
At that time, I was living in Greenwich Village, and I was seeing a psychiatrist, a lady friend. And one day she came home and said, Anthony, the greengrocers on such and such a street have really been bothering me. And so I said, okay, this is real life stuff. And then a couple of days passed, a week or so, and then she said, Anthony, again, she said, they're really, harassing me. So I said, just like this, the next time they do that, why don't you say, my cousin Johnny is going to come in and pay you a visit because I told him you were bothering me. John Gotti had his office, the mob boss had his office a few blocks away from what I'm talking about. And they all knew who Johnny was. And then when she came back, next time, she says, they're really leaving me alone now. And I said to myself, wow, that was powerful. In other words, in my culture, the Italian culture I was raised with, the image and the real life work and criminality and deadly reprisals, such a thing, are very strong. And then so I sat down and I wrote Conversation with Johnny, which was for me a dual project. That is in me, and I can say in Italian Americans who were raised in cities understand that we live side by side with gangsters and criminals. So in me, there were two voices. There was Nicholas, the narrator, and then there was Johnny, the mob boss. Now, my purpose was always to move the stereotypes along. And the stereotype of the criminal really didn't interest me anymore. Puzo had already written that in The Godfather. So I thought that I stepped upon a plateau in that project of humor, of power, at the center of which was a woman. And, you know, and in other words, whatever goes on in the Italian American community that you hear about, the woman is a central figure. She really is in the end the powerhouse. And so I had a triangle that interested me, and I wrote that book. That's how that came about.
So you have just personally recorded the audiobook now in 2021, which is why we are doing this podcast interview right now, all these years later. What was that experience like?
First of all, the experience, thank you for asking that question. I have recorded now three of my books. I reached a point during the COVID, the last year of our pandemic, of desiring to leave behind my voice, my spoken voice, children, grandchildren, and also unable to read. We'll give public readings. And then I connected with a group who were very professional engineers and recording, you know, people in that industry, and they were willing to record me. So that was a revisit to the days in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, when I was on the circuit reading from books, and I couldn't do that anymore. So in other words, I was affected by the pandemic and had a desire to read and experience the books in a different way. When I read a book, I really experience it in, as I said, a different way. It's how can I say? It's not. It's work, but it's the material in a different light. I read the Johnny book, you know, recently, and it was like a new experience of a book I had written a couple of decades ago.
So Nicholas, your main character, is a writer who teaches and lives in New York. Mm-hmm. What else does he have in common with you, Anthony Valerio?
He's a projection. He's a projection of the writer who's talking about, you know, issues of power and the sexual matters, and also someone who goes back to his neighborhood and meets up with his friend Johnny in the neighborhood where I grew up. I grew up in the same type of environment as Nicholas. I just gave him, I didn't want to use the first person. For me, writing, also my training is quite technical. We were trained, or we were taught, you know, I'm also a professional book editor. So we were trained and taught that the first person is very difficult to pull off. The third, we had an exercise where we would write something in the first person and then transform it into the third person and see how it goes. You can't just substitute a name for the I. You have to rewrite the whole thing. So I really wanted to project out of myself and create a character who was very close to my experience. So that's who Nicholas is and was. He lived in the village. He goes back to Brooklyn. I lived in the village. I came from Brooklyn, New York. And he has a lady friend who was married and left-handed and red-haired, and so did I. So there is, I'm a kind of worker, a fiction writer, who keeps sometimes close to the reality, but not quite.
When Nicholas says that he had a nickname in the family, did he mean his actual family of birth or his crime family? And if he was a part of all of that, what had his job been?
Nicholas was the opposite of a criminal. He was a poet. So he had no place. All he had, all Johnny was a neighborhood friend. In other words, so Nicholas was the opposite. So in other words, for me to have Johnny and Nicholas, they had to be opposites. One, in fact, and scholars have picked up on this, you might have noted, this project preceded The Sopranos, you know, the popular TV show. And in my project, Johnny is the kind of therapist. He's kind of a humorous figure where Nicholas is going to him and say, look, help me, you know, help me out here. I can't understand this woman. She's married. I can't, you know, help me. What can I do? And so forth. And Johnny gets annoyed and he kicks the table and he tries to get him a job. And in other words, he's a comedic foil the opposite actually of a criminal, because look, I really don't know if an actual gangster would sit down with a poet and talk to him about the difficulties of his life. All right. It was a very humorous setup, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it was both sad and a little funny that Nicholas developed an allergy to wheat and he can't eat pasta. But you also suggest maybe he always had the allergy because he cried for the first time in 3 years of his life. So what's your take on that whole story?
My take is the allergy to pasta. So what the effort was involved here is turning the stereotype of an Italian American and the Italian American community on its end. In other words, if you have an Italian who's allergic to wheat or garlic or cries a lot in public, or it's the opposite of the stereotype. And I must say, I'm really pleased that it's been taken that way. It's been, scholars pick that up, it's taught in, in university, this book, as an attempt and a successful attempt to move the myth of the Italian American gangster along to the level of humor and literature. So that's what I'm pleased about.
Some of the stories seem to spring from Nicholas's imagination. Of course, they're from your imagination, and he goes back in time to reference some of the great Italians of history. Can you say more about his references to Garibaldi?
Before our interview, I made a list of my books, 12 books, and I tried to remember the timeline and how they all evolved one to the other. The Conversation with Johnny project came after I had done work on Garibaldi. In my second book, Valentino and the Great Italians, it was a little small piece on Garibaldi. Then I was offered a contract to write a biography of Garibaldi. I found then that was too unwieldy, and I arrived at his cohort, Anita Garibaldi, and wrote that biography. So I had already had a great deal of research and experience with Garibaldi and other legends of the culture. In other words, if I was going to upend the stereotype, if I was going to debunk the stereotype, if I was going to transform the stereotype into something new, something fresh, I also needed to incorporate the icons of our culture. And Garibaldi was one.
Nicholas is having an affair, as you mentioned, with a married woman, a Jewish woman. So two-pronged question. What does she see in him? Also, you often mention Jewish characters. Why does that happen?
First of all, about the latter question of yours, which I appreciate both aspects of that question. When we were growing up, there was a great deal of racism in the culture and also in literature or in film, too, about Jewish people. And so what I had there was a character, a main character, Lefty, she's a main character, as a Jewish woman who represents and is in fact the, the source, the soreness of the racism incorporating that too, as well as the historical and the historical personages you mentioned, and also the historical, experience of Nicholas going back home to speak with a friend who's a gangster. So I think in the book now, I think there's a section where I think it was in Spike Lee or even The Godfather, there's racism, I'm remembering it clearly in Scorsese's Mean Streets. One of the local boys brings a couple of Jewish girls into the bar, and the comment is, well, how they are, that is, they're loose and they're available for, sexual experiences. So I was raised with that too. So I wanted a character who was not only Jewish, but powerful. So powerful that Nicholas didn't understand her, Johnny doesn't understand her. And so she emerges to me really, still today, you know, according to your question, as a supreme, how could I say, knockout of the stereotype.
Hmm.
And what was the other aspect of that question?
The other one was, what does she see in him? Whiny, and he's like, it's not clear what he's a writer and he's teaching, but
yeah,
he's just so plagued with angst.
So in other words, what she sees in him is, you know, his physical attraction, I must say. I mean, she comes to his place. She throws him on his bed. She comes up and begins the affair. She does. So that's in the book. I'm also sorry that, you know, I'm not going to ask you a question, but so you really didn't feel that that character of Nicholas was sympathetic or some a character you would be attracted to?
He had his moments, of course, and he was an Italian stud of some sort. And a poet, of course, so that's kind of enticing. But just that she's a married woman and he... Okay, here's my next question. You can
I'm going to interject. She is a married woman, but she also says there's no passion between us.
Yes.
So there's that whole issue. And how many times have we heard? I mean, I know I heard of men and women taking up with married persons who say, you know, I'll get a divorce soon and this and that, and it never happened. So that was that situation too. In other words, that character of Lefty was unattainable. And so she was unattainable all the way through. And he wanted more. And she always said, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. So that's what that was about.
Okay, so then a follow-up question. Why does Nicholas keep having affairs with married women instead of finding someone to love him best of all for the rest of his life?
Also, if I might, to answer that question, I'm pretty sure that in the book there is no other married person he has an affair with.
So how old is he supposed to be?
In his 40s.
Yeah, in his 40s. So yeah. How does he reach that point?
He says to Johnny, what happened to me? He goes there and says, what happened to me? I come from a good family, a good schooling. In other words, these questions you're asking, these are very interesting questions to me in the sense that if I knew the actual answers of what you're asking me, I probably would not have written the book. He goes back to Johnny and says, Johnny, what happened to me? I come from this, I did this and this. He doesn't know the answer. The answer is laid out in the literature. The answer is laid out in the book, in the prose. That's where it's laid out.
Well, see, I was worried about him. So the prose got me to care about him enough to worry.
That's an interesting highway, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so here's another thing. Nicholas needs Xanax. He's a young guy. He's in his 40s.
Well, I mean, look. He's a young guy, and these were lovers. These were wonderful lovers who insisted that kind of an affair, like mainly a matinee, so to speak, is really arranged. The meetings are arranged, and sex is necessarily a part of each and every one, every single time, every time. In other words, it's not a meeting. It's not a meeting to go out. Couldn't go out because she didn't want her husband to see, you know, catch her on the street. So that's the nature of that kind of affair. And sometimes, you know, sometimes, how can I put it? The male may have been instantly flagging in the attempt to, and then he goes to a doctor, and then he's prescribed Xanax, and then there's a whole scene about the whole Greek. You know, Xanax and a fight between the great warrior Xanax and Peristalsis and all the other Greek kinds of issues. I found that very funny, by the way.
It was also funny that even telling Johnny about Lefty causes Nicholas to hyperventilate.
That's right. That's exactly right. In other words, Johnny's on the receiving end. Johnny's the therapist. So if you go to a therapist, the therapist is going to listen. At times he gets annoyed and angry, you know, and at times they cry together, they laugh together. So in other words, it was really, look, as I said earlier, it was really one character. Nicholas and Johnny are one character. They're one. They're opposite. The two sides of the author, frankly.
Oh, now, I didn't see that.
This is why this is wonderful, Khalid.
Okay. Why is Nicholas so upset about the kid professor? And what does he want Johnny to do about it?
The kid professor is also, a major minor character who is also in the culture of Nicholas and Johnny. And he's coming up. He's the future. And Nicholas wants to make sure that any headway the book makes through Nicholas and Johnny, as far as the stereotypical of the culture, Italian culture, Nicholas wants to make sure that the kid professor knows what to do with the legacy. That's what that's about. And in other words, there's a part where we'll take him down to, you know, the Bahamas, and we'll talk to him, you know, and we'll make sure that he stays on the road to progress and doesn't fall back into things like criticizing his wife or doing stupid things that Italian, you know, that the culture or in the books about Italians occurred 20, 30, 40 years before. In other words, he's a character who must inherit what Johnny and Nicholas are saying and frankly achieving through their intercourse. That's mm-hmm. who the kid professor is.
So I know from your bio that you're a jazz aficionado, and you mentioned a singer or two, but you focus on two guitarists whose albums I had back in the day, Bucky Pizzarelli and his son John Pizzarelli. So why what do you love about them?
Well, when Nicholas first meets Lefty, they're at a event at PEN. You know, the pen event, and Pizzarelli was performing. So in other words, John Pizzarelli was performing at the event where Nicholas and Lefty meet, where they meet for the first time, where he sees her hat walking across the ballroom. And then Nicholas remembers that he had known or remembered John Pizzarelli's father, Bucky. Bucky was more in Nicholas's generation than John. John was more in the generation of Lefty.
Mm-hmm. So I think you notice that I'm a classically trained musician. And so this kind of stuff interests me. Nicholas and Johnny start talking about some of the great Italian operas and how they continue to speak to current Italians. And I'm wondering why you chose La Bohème to focus on, because since they're both by Puccini, why didn't you choose Tosca? Because it's so Italian. Okay, that's the question. Why Bohème?
Thank you for that question. I come from a family of professional singers. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was a Verdi baritone. One of my uncles recorded, he was a tenor. So I grew up believing that all language, that people were speaking opera, you know, in Italian. That's how I grew up. I mean, I was like, there would be a Christmas Eve, and they would say, Anthony, go put on this singer, and then we'd compare singers. They were very erudite as far as that. Now, La Bohème was a favorite. La Bohème was a love story, while Tosca was really a political story. La Bohème was a love story that in the book, La Bohème is a tragic story. The musical is soaring. And, you know, also to become a writer the way I did, I had to neutralize the schmaltz, the lyrical flights of Puccini. Schmaltz in a good way, you know, it's beautiful. But I had to neutralize that with a kind of ice pack. I had to be, I thought you might ask why pick why choose Puccini over even Verdi or,
Didn't have a problem with that. I thought that was a good choice, Puccini.
Well, the opportunity now, I can hear the arias now. The opportunity with Puccini was to say, to correct that it was in fact a tragedy. I mean, they were poor, and I do it. I actually say, hey, everybody, you got all this wrong. What's the project, the film where La Boheme, you know, with Cher and...
Rent?
Not Rent, no.
Moonstruck?
Moonstruck. I mean, it annoyed me where they're falling in love and playing La Boheme as if La Boheme supports their love that they're about to embark, whereas La Boheme's a tragic story. Mimi dies at the end. They don't have enough food. They have to sell their coats and they, you know. So I was raised understanding the words, what the words of the arias meant, and it was not sweet. It was not supportive of a love affair. As in the Cher project, which by the way, I mean, I know people love it, and you know, it's great. But that was my feeling at the time when I was writing. When that came up, when the music aspect came up, it was all part of not debunking, but actually shining a light on really, really the reality of the culture was not that hospitable. It was not that sweet and hospitable and generous as the stereotype of Italians is made to be.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, you were kind enough to share the first chapter of what I think is your current project. Can you say more about it?
Thank you very much. In this period, post-pandemic, mm-hmm. I was actually asked by someone very close to me that she did not know me when I was training to be a writer. As I said, I was a professional book editor. And my training as an editor in the 1960s was with in publishing companies. You know, the only job you can get then was in a publishing company if you wanted to stay near words, because the writing, you know, there were no school, you know, graduate schooling, writing programs and so forth where you could teach. And so I was trained by wonderful copy editors, one in particular. And that's where I trained. And that company was a soft pornography. It was a company that published what we called then soft porn as opposed to hard porn. So the title of the book is, maybe we can talk about it when it's done, is Confessions of... What's the title? Confessions of an Aspiring Pornographer.
Yeah.
It really is about my training as an editor. See, because when you're training to copy edit, you're not going to copy edit Hemingway. There's very little to do with great writers changing this and that. And what I mean by copy edit, not just changing, say, if a time frame is wrong or a color is wrong, I'm actually getting into the prose, getting into the sentences and making them more fluid. The material we worked on was awful. It was crap. So we really worked hard. And that company happened to get calls for different kinds of books that you would call soft porn. And so I'm remembering, this is now I'm remembering, this is interesting, you should ask that, because this training occurred before I wrote any of these of the books that I have published, which are 12 in number. That training was before that. So that's what this book is about. The kind of training, the kind of books we were asked to write, and also confessions in from the beginning, you know, of my, you know, of actually it's an eye. It's in the eye, which is very scary for me.
Is it going to be fiction, though? Or is this
Yeah, it's going to be fiction. It's a fiction book. So, you know, I'll let you know. Maybe we can.
Yeah, let me know.
I will let you know.
Okay. Anthony, it's been lovely talking to you. Best of luck with Confessions, with Conversation with Johnny, the Audible version.
Hmm. Listen, I really enjoyed this, by the way. I really, really feel that, right now, I'm really, really very satisfied and pleased by the questions you ask, and wishing you good luck also.
And thank you for joining me. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking with author Anthony Valerio about his new audiobook for the novel Conversation with Johnny. Hope you're all able to lose yourself in a good book today and tomorrow too. Happy reading!